From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later this hour. Just wrapped up being interviewed in Australia, where they love Coast to Coast. Many listeners there picking us up off of Streamlink. So hello to you, Aussies. Next hour. His name is Chris Fleming. He's one of the hosts of the television series Dead Famous. He'll be sharing some incredible stories of ghost investigations of some well-known people. You will recognize most of those names. A nor'easter that drew energy from the remnants of the far-off Hurricane Wilma battered New England and the mid-Atlantic states with 20-foot waves and winds up to 70 miles an hour, brought some inland areas their first snow of the season, if you can believe that, and knocked out power to nearly 200,000 homes and businesses. The powerful nor'easter reminded fishermen of the deadly Perfect Storm movie of October 1991. "It's pretty nasty," said John Yard, who had rented an apartment a block from the ocean out there in New Jersey. He said it just was incredible. Meanwhile, as we continue to watch the remnants, repair crews across Florida struggled to restore electricity to up to 6 million people, reopen the region's airports, and replace countless windows blown out of the downtown high-rises during Hurricane Wilma's ruinous dash across the state. Officials said it could take weeks for Florida's most heavily populated region, the Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and West Palm Beach area, to return to normal. Water and gas became precious commodities, and people waited for hours for free water, ice, and food. Lines stretched for blocks at the few gas stations with electricity needed to pump fuel, and arguments broke out when motorists tried to cut in line. More than 500 people waited outside one store just for cleanup supplies. Pakistan's army flew a team of geologists to an isolated northwestern valley to investigate reports by very anxious villagers of possible volcanic activity in the wake-shattered Himalayan foothills. An official from Pakistan's meteorological department said there was little chance of volcanic activity as the country has no recent history of eruptions. Nevertheless, a two-man team left for the Alai Valley to investigate the villagers' claims. A volcano on the largest of the Galapagos Islands erupted for the third straight day Tuesday, but experts said it did not threaten villagers on the island or the super-sized tortoises that gave the remote area its name. The White House sidestepped questions about whether Vice President Dick Cheney told his chief of staff about the CIA officer at the center of the leak probe as investigators wrapped up interviews with witnesses ahead of indictments expected as early as tomorrow. Now, the FBI was still interviewing some people earlier. The last-minute round of interviews conducted by the FBI came as attention shifted to Cheney's possible role in the leak case. Meanwhile, Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee are so happy with the reports of Leakgate prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald and the way he's handling this situation. They want him to conduct an investigation into whether President Bush lied to Congress about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. This could end up being a major story. They say the CIA leak issue is only the tip of the iceberg, according to House Judiciary Democrat Gerald Nadler. In a letter asking the Justice Department to expand the scope of Fitzgerald's investigation, Nadler says, "We now have reason to believe that high crimes may have been committed at the highest level, wrongdoing that may have led us to war and imperiled our national security. If there is evidence that Bush or Cheney authorized aides to deliberately mislead lawmakers," Nadler told the Congressional Quarterly, "that would be an impeachable offense." In December of 2004, I had a guest on the program. You know him well, by the name of Hans Christian King. We were talking about some prophecy. He predicted that something would happen major in the Bush administration. Now listen to this. This was a year ago. What do the spirit guides tell you about 2005?
2005 is going to wind up. There's going to be a major government scandal involving the president. It's already in the works. There are some things that are going to be coming out in the next 5 to 6, 7 months that will place this president in a very embarrassing position.
Well, we shall see. The death of an Army sergeant pushed the United States military death toll in Iraq to the landmark figure of 2,000 on Tuesday. But President George Bush has warned more sacrifices were needed before U.S. troops could come home. The news cast a shadow over the final results of the Iraqi referendum, which showed that voters had ratified a new constitution, despite bitter opposition in Sunni Arab areas where insurgents are battling to topple the Baghdad government. A story that we told you about last week, a body believed to be that of a World War II airman found frozen in the Sierra Nevada, arrived in Hawaii now for identification. The body in an Army uniform was discovered earlier this month, mostly encased in a glacier in Kings Canyon National Park. It had been thawing since last week at the coroner's office in Fresno County. The body was flown out of Traverse Air Force Base to Hickam Air Force Base in Oahu. The examination, which will take several weeks at least, will be done by a joint POW-MIA accounting command. And if an identification could solve part of a decades-old mystery, the disappearance of a navigational training plane that left the Sacramento airfield in November of 1942, carrying a crew of four on a routine flight. A 23-year-old man has died from bird flu in Indonesia, the country's fourth death from the virus, and China has announced a new outbreak among geese and chickens. Indonesia health officials said the victim is a 23-year-old man. He died near Jakarta. China reported its new outbreak to the World Health Organization. The H5N1 strain has killed now at least 61 people in Asia since 2003. The latest developments come as health officials from more than 30 nations meet in Canada to discuss how to plan for what they say is a human influenza pandemic, which they say is inevitable. Others that have been on this program say it's not going to happen. Elmer Len Dreslar Jr., who pitched vegetables to generations of television watchers as the booming voice of the Jolly Green Giant, has died at the age of 80. Dreslar died of cancer. He was an entertainer and singer for nearly six decades, but his voice rang through millions of households when he sang that simple ho, ho, ho in an ad jingle for Green Giant Foods. Strange story in Colorado, 16 more horses found dead near Calhanc. This is the same area where six other horses were found last week, so that's about 22. The sheriff not releasing many details here. They simply say, the toxicology reports for rat poison are negative. Now he's beginning to think maybe lightning did them in. Nearly 60 whales died in a mass stranding on a remote beach in southern Australia. Rescuers are struggling to save about 10 survivors. Two groups of long-finned pilot whales beached themselves near Marion Bay on the southern island state of Tasmania. A fisherman first reported seeing the whales swimming ashore. But when they got a closer look, they found that they just couldn't help them. The majority of the 67 stranded whales were already dead. In a moment, we're going to go to Australia to talk with a special guest about this situation in Australia. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Kindell is the director of the Antarctic Wildlife Research Unit in the School of Zoology at the University of Tasmania in Australia. His primary research interests are in the biology of marine mammals and seabirds, particularly with respect to Antarctic and sub-Antarctic ecosystems. This research encompasses a variety of disciplines, including energetics and metabolism, population dynamics, and socioecology. He is currently running several major programs, including foraging ecology of Antarctic seals. He's our guest on Coast to Coast. Mark, this situation with these beached whales, just what is going on? This happens way too often these days.
Well, it's been happening for a very long time. In fact, as long as we've got records. So whales have been stranding in southern Tasmania, southern Australia, and in fact all around the world forever. It's just something that they seem to do.
Can we blame it on some kind of environmental problem that they seem to pick up, or is it something else?
It would be nice to be able to blame it on something, but really our best knowledge at the moment suggests that every stranding has its own individual causes. But we do know that there are some underlying patterns to the strandings.
And what are they?
Well, it seems that there's a cycle to it, and that we get peaks in the numbers of strandings every 12 to 14 years. And at the moment, we're actually just about at one of those peaks.
Do you think it might have anything to do with maybe a shifting magnetic poles, perhaps a sonar from submarines?
Those things have all been looked at to varying degrees, and actually don't fit with this cycle that we're seeing. What we think is happening is that there's some climatic changes associated with the cycle. And we do know that every 14 years, 12 to 14 years here in southern Australia, we go through periods of increased storm activity, changes in water temperature, and that's probably changing the distribution of the whales at sea. All the whales that strand are species which tend to live to the south of Australia. But in these periods of increased strandings, they seem to have moved further north and coming close to the coastlines. And that makes them vulnerable to being stranded.
Mark, are they confused? Are their bearings off? Or are they, you know, if we can put it in human terms, are they committing suicide by hitting these beaches?
No, they're not committing suicide. It depends on the species of whale. There are many different species of whale down here, all of which strand to some degree. The ones that are stranding at the moment are pilot whales, and they're a highly social species. They have very tight pod cohesion, and they will stay together even when one of them is sick or stranded. So if one animal strands, then most of the others will probably get stranded as well.
Now, even though that they, I assume, know that they could meet an untimely death by doing that?
Yeah, I don't think they actually strand themselves deliberately. I think what happens is they get into a situation which means that they are going to become stranded. For example, a lot of the beaches, there are some beaches where they strand more often than others. There are some beaches that they've stranded quite a few times. And the one that's happening at the moment is at a beach where they've stranded before. And some of these beaches have characteristics which encourage stranding, like offshore sandbars where the animals get caught in shallow water and the tide goes out, for example, and they're less stranded.
And they're stranded that way. Now, with the regular kind of beaching that occurs, what happens? Does the mammal storm to the beach, or how does that occur?
You know, we very rarely see a stranding happen. And if we could see it more often, then we could probably stop it. Usually what we're faced with is a situation where we suddenly find a bunch of animals on a beach. So the actual process of how they get there isn't at all clear.
How long can a whale live on land?
That depends. It sounds like a typical scientist answer, but it really does depend. Here in Tasmania, they tend to not last very long because the beaches are very active. There's lots of wave action. And what kills the whales is that they actually get buried. You can imagine a big heavyweight sitting on soft sand with waves washing over
sure.
it. It takes the sand out from underneath, and they tip onto their sides. They get buried and their blowholes get covered. And that's one of the things that kills them quite quickly. So if we're not onto strandings very quickly, then that can be what kills them. Otherwise, they can just dry out if they get left high and dry. And once their skin dries out, it cracks. There's infections and so forth.
Now, a medium-sized pilot whale is about, what, 20 feet long, something like that?
Yes, he says, doing a quick conversion to meters in his head. That's about right. they're a medium-sized whale. They can weigh up to, you know, a ton or so. So they're very hard to move.
I was going to say, do you have to do it with machinery? How do you do this? I mean, like these 10 now that are out there that they're, and maybe they've saved some since we got this report, but how do they save them?
Well, I was going to say we're lucky here, but that's probably not the right word. But Our wildlife authorities have a lot of experience with whale strandings because we have so many here. They have a range of different techniques that they use to get the animals back into the water. They try not to use machines because that can damage the animals. What they tend to use are inflatable pontoons that they roll the animals onto, and then they have inflatable sides, and they inflate those and the animal floats, and then they can take them out to the water on those.
Now, when you say that, since recorded history, we know about these beachings, you know, what about 200, 300 years ago? Can we assume this was going on then, too?
I think we can pretty safely assume that. As I say, at least in Tasmania, we have records of strandings from the first times Europeans arrived here about 200 years ago. There's no reason to think that they weren't occurring before then. I mean, even if you go back way back, Aristotle recorded strandings back in his day. So that has been a long-term ongoing phenomenon.
Might we be able just to chalk this up, Mark, to an accident, it just happened? It's a fluke every once in a while?
Yeah, I think even whales make mistakes. You know, they find themselves in circumstances that they're not used to. A lot of the whales that strand, especially in large groups like these pilot whales, are oceanic species. So they're not at all familiar with coastlines. And they probably get close into a coast, and maybe the wave noise confuses them. There's all sorts of things that could go wrong once they get in close. So, yeah, I think that's just bad luck. They have accidents.
What other creatures, what other animals tend to beach themselves beyond whales?
Well, all sorts of animals beach themselves. Squid. We occasionally get big groups of squid getting washed up. Even little crustaceans get washed up occasionally. But I guess whales are different insofar as
they're so big.
They're so big, they're obvious, and everybody would like to see them back in the water and healthy. People aren't so upset if there's a big bunch of squid on the beach.
What about dolphins? Have they ever beached themselves?
Yeah, dolphins certainly get beached as well. Not often in such large groups, but occasionally we do get large groups of dolphins stranding as well, and that happens everywhere.
Tragically, what happens to these 60-plus dead whales? What do they do?
There will be some postmortems done. One of the things that we can at least get from strandings is some information about the basic biology of the animals, because being offshore oceanic animals, they're very hard to study. So this actually offers a rare chance for us to learn something about them. But also we might be able to learn something about the causes of the strandings as well, and there'll be some specific autopsies done to look at things like problems perhaps with the inner ear. There's been some speculation that some of the strandings could be due to the fact that the animals have got ear damage. So there'll be some specific studies done to try and work out what's happening as well.
Mark, you've got a lot of expertise with regards to Antarctica. I've got to ask you, anything strange going on down there, things that you may have witnessed over the years?
That might bear on whale strandings, do you mean?
Anything that might be going on, that weather changes, anything?
Not really. I mean, the climate is changing in Antarctica like it is everywhere else, but it's a very slow process. It's very hard to detect on the scale of a single lifetime. So we're not seeing profound changes, particularly in terms of the animals at the moment.
You know, we've had, since the tsunami on December 26, we've had just an incredible array of strange earth changes. We've had hurricanes, for example, hitting the United States almost one after, another. They just don't stop. Do you find weather changes to be that extreme in Australia?
Well, you certainly have been having a bit of a rough of it recently. Certainly we see that, and as I said at the start, there are these cycles as well in weather patterns. A well-known one is El Nino, but perhaps there are other cycles that are occurring as well. So, yeah, we certainly have periods of increased storm activity.
Okay, Mark, thank you for updating us on the situation with the whales. It's unfortunate, but I guess it just happens.
Thank you.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Mark Kindell, he's an expert on the beaching of animals, mammals like that, these whales. We've got open lines now. Here are the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800 825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, that's ready for you right now at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know, last Friday we had Linda Moulton Howe on. We were talking about the avian flu and also the pythons that are in Florida that are just growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And what Linda does is when she goes out and she does her interviews now, she sends us the tapes per her instructions, and then we edit them here, and then we play them on the air. It just sounds better. The quality's much better that way than for Linda to have to play it from wherever she may be through a system that she has that we've given her to go through the phone. It's better out of the studio. And so she called DHL and shot it out here, and it was going to be here for Friday morning, and we would edit it, and all would be well for Linda's report on Friday night, right? Well, the tape just never got here. So Tom had to call Linda and say, Linda, we don't have the tape here, and unless you have a backup to this interview, we're out of luck. And she happened to have one. And so she played it through the older system that she has, and everything went okay. Well, today, Tom gets a package from DHL, this huge package. I'm telling you, a huge package from Linda Moulton Howe. And he's going, what the heck is this? Now, these tapes are small, right? This box is huge. It must weigh 50 pounds. He opens up the package. In it is a very, very, very old carburetor from some car. Greasy and oily and old. Somehow, when they picked up Linda's package and they picked up this guy's package, they mixed them up. They put the stickers on the wrong boxes. So we've got this guy's old carburetor, and somebody out there, some repair shop somewhere, has got Linda Moulton Howe's tapes on the avian flu and pythons. It makes no sense. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let's go to the phones east of the Rockies. You're on the line. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Oh, hey, my name is Bill. Hey, maybe that carburetor you got is one of those secret carburetors that you hear about that gets like 100 miles a gallon.
You know, for a moment, I thought she was sending us some piece of a UFO or something like that until I looked at this thing. No, it's a real old carburetor, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Listen, a few years ago, my wife and I decided to move down to Florida. We took our camper down there, and things didn't work out too great. So we got our money together and decided to make a trip back up. And we got about to Virginia and ran out of money. So I took my last 20 bucks. We went to a campground, stayed the night. I set up the TV, and the only thing we got was a religious channel. And we're kind of worried about, you know, how we're going to make our trip
sure. The
rest of the way back. And a preacher comes on and says, travelers on the road, everything is going to be okay. So I was outside at the time, and my wife comes running out and says, wow, you know, I just saw this, what the preacher said. And I said, oh, that's great. And so a little while later, I go take a shower, get out of the shower thing. And for some reason, I walk around the back, and in the leaves, I find 500 bucks.
Oh.
And it was just like, amazing. It saved us so much. You know, we made it back, and everything worked out just fine.
Isn't that something? How does that work that way?
I don't know, but it just seemed like a miracle. Right place, the right time, with a message on the television and everything.
You believe in miracles now, don't you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Listen, on Sundays when Art doesn't, when he decides to stop doing the show, maybe you could have Richard C. Hoagland do a whole show or something.
Maybe. You never know. You never know. Okay. See, we've got a process here that we try to have on the air hosting, obviously, professional broadcasters who've been in the business for a long, long time. But I don't have any problems of having Richard come on programs to provide his expertise, because he does a great job like that. But in terms of just pure hosting, requirement that they be professional broadcasters. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
George.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Las Vegas. This is Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I'm a longtime listener of Coast to Coast for about 11 years.
Wow, you are one of them. Thanks.
Oh, longtime listener. Makes me very educated. I have a question for you. A few years ago, the Earth had a galactic thing that happened. Now, I don't hear too many people talk about it. If you remember, the planets aligned.
Yes.
I don't remember when that was, probably around 98, 99.
And then they had another one not too long ago, right?
Right. They always say that something's going to happen, and now everyone's always like waiting for the next day for something cataclysmic to happen.
And nothing happens.
But my theory is that it doesn't always just happen the very next day. And I was wondering if any of the speakers that you have ever talked about that. I listen quite often. I've never heard that subject been brought up.
Well, we've kicked around some things like that. We haven't done whole shows on it at all. I mean, it'll come in, there'll be a phone call that pops in or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I just wonder if maybe that isn't the reason for all the things that are happening on the Earth because of the planets aligning,
well, you know,
causing Earth changes.
Everything could have something to do with it. I think a lot has to do with the sun, for example. I think that when that kicks in, which is pretty unusual right now because things are supposed to be quiet. I think that's had a lot to do with it, too. Cycles. We're in cycles. West of the Rockies, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey there. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Hey, I want to tell you something. I called a couple months ago talking to you about suspected weather manipulation.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you right now, it is for sure this time.
Why do you say that?
Well, okay. Now, you've seen a lot and you heard a lot about chemtrails, right?
Oh, sure.
I've had a lot of time to stargaze out here. I'm a security guard. I work at night. And over at where I work, there's over 150 golf courses. We live in one of the richest areas in the valley.
150 so, golf courses?
Look it up, Coachella Valley. I'm serious.
All right.
Anyways, out here, I was looking, and I saw these, like F-14 jets or something, just flying in the middle of the night. This is right before we had that giant, huge weather storm front down here in California a couple days ago.
Okay.
When they were out here, I was on the phone with my friend, and I was just talking about the show because I was listening to it at the same time. While I was on the phone with her, I see the jet go across, no big deal, see chemtrail go up. It starts turning into like a giant cumulus cloud. And then I see it mix up with a couple other clouds over in the southeast corner where I was looking at. Then from there, I saw other jets crisscrossing in a pattern. I remember you had a weatherman on a couple months ago talking about square clouds and things like that.
Scott Stevens.
That's the one. I remember hearing that show and thinking to myself, like, I've seen some crazy stuff like that out here. It wouldn't be a stretch of the imagination for one of the wealthiest places in the world to have automated weather manipulation.
Just to make it rain, things like that?
Just to make the weather cool, just to make it nice for the golfers out here. If you lived out here, you'd understand.
No, you're right. You're right. No, I'm not in your specific area, but I've done some valley things here, and it gets hot.
Out over here in the valley, though, I mean, the thing is that they could serve a lot more good purposes than just, you know, making the weather nice or just doing things like that. I mean, you think about all these hurricanes that might suspectedly be weather manipulation. I mean, this is like a serious global thing we should really be watching. This isn't small time.
Well, you know, I've had more experts talk about weather manipulation than not. I had a fellow on who used to do weather training back even 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. He said there's no question they have attempted to manipulate the weather. They even did it. He doesn't think they're doing it today anymore. I'm not sure. I think something's going on.
I'm telling you, there's a snake in the grass here because of the fact that it's very, very easy. I mean, who are you going to believe? These people of the government, they're always saying, okay, oh, yeah, of course we tried it. You know, that never happened. Like Roswell, they just dropped dummies, right? I'm sure about that.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
No problem, man.
Appreciate it. Next up, Wild Card Line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Stacy from Phoenix.
Hey, Vicki, what's going on in Phoenix?
Oh, Stacy, sorry.
Stacy.
I had a question. Last week you were talking about how animals can see things that the rest of, that humans really don't see.
Mm-hmm. Or sense, too. Yep.
Yeah. I think babies have the same thing. Like my daughter, she would see stuff, like she would watch something move across the room, or she'd jabber to someone.
I used to remember seeing my daughters when they were little babies with their eyes wandering. and you always wonder, what the heck are they looking at? You know, you don't have one of those things over their crib or anything like that. And you don't know what they're looking at. So, you know, you might be right.
She would, she would reach for something, like she's reaching for, like someone's holding out their hand. She would reach for them, you know, and then jabber away and then, you know, watch. It seemed like she was watching them just kind of move across the room.
And they coo and they giggle at nothing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it could be, you know, half the time it could be, you know, just nothing at all. But other times, you know, it's got to be something because then, or you have like little kids, they would just jabber about their imaginary friend. And, you know, I mean, they can just talk about stuff that you wouldn't think that they would understand at that, you know, that time of age.
Well, and let's hope if it is occurring that these entities are fun and friendly, which probably is the case in most cases. You wonder if this is really happening, what the poor little kid might be going through if it's some kind of demon type figure.
Yeah, I know someone at work, her daughter has like a witch or something that scares the heck out of her.
Well, what does she say?
Well, she just doesn't really say a whole lot. She just kind of stares at her, and she's just really creepy looking. She, like, reaches out to her.
Oh, my.
And, like, closes her hand, like, right in front of her face. Like, she's trying to, I don't know, like, grab her face or something. And she's just like...
How old's the kid?
I don't really remember how... I think she's, like, 10 now or something.
Okay, but enough to explain what she thinks is going on, right?
Oh, yeah. She's...
Yeah, well, that's got to be pretty scary for a kid. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Stacy. Next up, we shall go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. I'm sorry, George.
That's okay. Yeah.
This is Brad from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, I was calling to see, I overheard last night that you said that you did the interview with Rosa Parks.
1971. Talked to Rosa Parks in Detroit, Michigan.
Do you still have that tape?
No, I can't find anything from those days.
Oh, well,
I have moved. You know, that's 34 years ago. I wish I did. I'm looking for three things that I've done that I remember: the Rosa Parks interview, the interview with Stanton Friedman, the ufologist. That was my very first interview, and then in 1975, Jimmy Hoffa, right before he disappeared.
Wow. Well, that pretty much answered my question. I was going to see if we could, if you would,
I would
play those tapes for us.
If I had it, I'd play it, believe me.
I'm sure you would.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is Jeff. I'm calling from Tulsa, KFKQ.
Oh, sure thing. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing? Shadow people. George, I've been listening to your show for a year now, and I always... You know, I didn't know for sure if they really existed, but I found out for sure.
What happened?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm raising two daughters on my own, and we were moving from our old house, looking for a new house, and we had to move out. It's a long story. Anyway, we had to stay with a friend that lives just right outside of a little town called Chelsea in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And she lives on 80 acres, beautiful place. When her and her husband moved into it, it was just a huge one-bedroom house, but they were doing an add-on and making it into two bedrooms. Well, her husband ended up killing himself right in front of her, took a handful of pills.
Oh, God.
That's the second person on that land to die. The first one was an Indian, this is what I hear. But the thing, weird things started happening. Her and her daughter would come back home to the house and find bird feathers on the inside of the house, huge bird feathers. They would be sitting there watching TV, and they would hear something on the roof and go outside, and nothing was there. They would see like a black ghost on the front of the porch and a white ghost on the back porch. I mean, just weird stuff like this. And so, you know, we only had to stay there about a month, me and my two daughters. Well, she had told us we had to really be careful on what kind of movies we watched at that house, which I didn't really dawn on me at the time. But, I asked her one night if she wanted to watch The Mothman Prophecies, and she said yes. Well, we watched them, and the next night, I stayed in her daughter's room because her daughter was gone a lot. The next night, I come home. I get off about 3 in the morning. I come home, and I try to go to sleep. And, George, I mean, I had seen things out of the side of my eye before, and I thought maybe it was just something in the eye fluid. But these shadow people were all over the inside of this room and in my face. It was almost like I could physically feel their presence in my face. And I had to get up and say a prayer. And I turned on a Christian station of music, and it stopped.
You must have been shaking.
Oh, you know, I have never had anything like this ever happen to me in my life before, and I've actually lived in a haunted house. So it was just, yeah, shadow people do exist.
Yep. I mean, you found out the hard way.
And I did not see them out of the corner of my eye. They were right in front of my face.
Okay, thanks for the story. Yes, they do exist. Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Beth from Nashville.
Beth, what's going on in Nashville? A great city.
Oh, it is a great city, and we've got William Henry here, and he's wonderful.
Yeah, he is.
So, anyway, I'm calling because of the beached whales,
mm-hmm.
and I believe is it Dr. Turi?
Louis Turi, yes.
Yes, who was on recently and talking, you know, his predictions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he was talking about was Mercury in retrograde.
Right.
And he mentioned that that would also affect the whales and the dolphins and that there would be beachings.
Isn't he incredible?
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty amazing. That's another one of his...
Another hit.
Another hit for him, yeah.
He's got three more dates coming up in November, too. Let's see what happens with those. I mean, part of me wants him to be wrong because I don't want us to have to go through this stuff.
Yeah.
But he's not.
But on the other hand, if he's right and we can count on it, then we can start to prepare.
Man, I'm telling you, he's got a direct link to somebody upstairs. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you for having him on and for all your other wonderful
sure
guests.
Sure thing. I appreciate that. Let us go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Well, what a shame. The person was probably holding for some time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi there.
George,
yes,
hey.
Sir. Yeah.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I've got a quick story and then a question for you.
Okay.
I'm Thomas from Mississippi. I'm listening to you on Super Talk Mississippi. I've got a grandmother who was affected by Hurricane Katrina, and she came to stay with my family. And one night when my mom was up for a glass of water, she saw my 91-year-old grandmother outside and went to go talk to her. And my grandmother said to my mom that she was at a wedding party and she was dressed in her nightgown and said that she was talking to all these different guests at the wedding party, but she couldn't understand a word that she said and that she was really embarrassed that she was wearing her nightgown and was really confused. And that's one story. She's been seeing a lot of imaginary people. She just went back to her house in South Mississippi. Like I said, she was affected by the hurricane. She went back to her house and was talking to my mom and said that the people had been to visit her.
And they don't think she's suffering from anything, any dementia or any problems like that?
Not at all. Like I said, she's 91 years old. She's never had any mental problems. She is sharp as a tack and tell you about stories from when she was just a kid.
Yeah.
She marched in FDR's inaugural parade. And she tells stories from when she was, you know, very little. So we don't think that she's suffering from amnesia or Alzheimer's or anything like that. But what I was thinking was that maybe she had, maybe gotten to the age or the mental capacity. She's been an educator all her life. She's
yeah.
been a teacher and a dean of students. She's very bright, but I was thinking that maybe she had the mental capacity to see and or converse with, talk to spirits.
Well, she might, and, you know, at 91, it could be the other side kind of like preparing her, you know, maybe making things easier for her, you know what I mean?
Well, that's interesting. I have another grandmother who passed away, but in the few days before her death, she died of lung cancer, but a few days before her death, she claimed that she saw her Aunt Joanne at her bedside. And so that's just another reinforcement.
There is no question that I think your loved ones who have died come to your side when it's your turn. As a matter of fact, that's kind of interesting to lead into our guest, Chris Fleming, and he hosts a program called Dead Famous on the network of Biography. You've seen that. And we're going to be talking with Chris about some incredible ghost encounters and stories, investigations, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.